It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Albert Einstein, Thomas Edison, General George Patton, Robin Williams, John Lennon, and Cher are all people who had traits associated with dyslexia, a language-based learning disability, though the preferred term is learning difference. A one-day conference on dyslexia in Pittsburgh this week is looking to shed some light on the disorder and help parents, teachers, and others better understand it. I'm joined now in Studio A by Christine Seppi. She is chairperson of the Pittsburgh region of the International Dyslexia Association. Christine Seppi, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And we'd like to hear from you, your experiences with dyslexia, if you, like those famous people we mentioned, share those traits, or if you have a sibling, son or daughter, who has traits of dyslexia, share your stories and your questions with us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at ESSPGH and follow the conversation at #EPLive. So first off, Christine, how common is dyslexia?
It is a lot more common than people realize. Sally Shaywitz, who's one of the lead researchers, says one in five people.
One in five.
One in five worldwide.
So 25% of everybody in the world has
20%.
Did I say 25?
20%.
See, this is where my bad math trips me up. 20%, though, still, one in five, 20% of all the people in the world have some traits associated with dyslexia.
Yes.
So what are the misconceptions that people have when it comes to dyslexia?
The most common misconception is that people with dyslexia see things backwards and write backwards or read backwards, and that's just not true at all. It's not a question of seeing. It's a question of remembering what it looks like. So if they see the word was and say it as saw, it's not because they were seeing backwards. It's because they don't remember which way it goes. And the other misconception is that it's an intelligence issue, that people are not smart. People with dyslexia are of average to above average intelligence, some of them brilliantly gifted.
And does it sometimes, in an odd way, work to a person's advantage?
Well, people who are dyslexic who are successful say yes. People like Charles Schwab, Richard Branson, say that they see things in a different – see as in understand – problems in a different way than other people, come to different conclusions in a different way. Often people with dyslexia have a real ability to see things spatially that some of the rest of us don't have.
412-246-2002, the number to call if you have a comment or a question for Christine Seppi. And let's go to the phones. We have Rose in Castle Shannon who wants to join the conversation. Rose, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I guess what I'm calling into years ago, actually the day before the American Disability Act went into effect, I forced the state of Ohio to give me my bar exam alternatively based on my dyslexia. And so I've learned in the 20-some years since that the prejudice against dyslexic people can still be there. Unfortunately, there's been a number of law firms and even some county and state offices who would not hire me as an attorney when they learn I'm dyslexic because they feel that it's going to have some problem. They get around it by simply hiring somebody they say has a better grade average than mine. Although I did graduate with a 2.99999999999 infinitum. And my undergraduate I graduated summa cum laude.
Well, let me ask you this.
Summa cum laude. What?
When you took this test, you said it was the Ohio bar exam?
And the Pennsylvania bar exam. I've taken both.
And this was both were taken roughly 20-some years ago?
They were taken in 91 and 92.
Okay, and so what did they do differently for you from the way that the test was given to anybody else who had previously taken it?
Well, first of all, Ohio said anybody who could not read and write and comprehend the English language was not permitted to sit for the bar exam. And as your expert would tell you, that is not what the problem is with somebody who is dyslexic. I can read and write the English language quite well. The problem is a time-spatial thing. And your your guest is very right. I see things slightly differently. So what they did was, as they accommodated me through law school, under the Rehabilitation Act of 72 or 73, they gave me time and a half, which means my bar exam started at 7 o'clock in the morning and ended at 6:30 in the evening, and I had 1 hour for lunch. I was separated from all other people taking the exam. In Ohio, they put me in a hotel room with a table and a desk. It was quite funny because just before my exam started, they had a gentleman come in to try to remove the TV, which was literally bolted to a table. They removed the telephone and the telephone book.
Let me let Christine jump in and sort of speak to this story of how Rose was tested here. Is society becoming a little more enlightened with how they try to fairly administer to people like Rose, for example?
A little more, but unfortunately, her situation is not uncommon still. You might have to fight to get the accommodations you need, and that time and a half is what the accommodation that's usually given to somebody who is moderately dyslexic for a standardized test. Interestingly enough, people who've done studies with it have found that people who don't need extra time to read actually do less well on a standardized test if they're given extra time. But somebody who's dyslexic tends to read more slowly, and they just need a little more time to comprehend.
Well, we're certainly – Rose, thank you for the call. We're glad that you passed the bar and are able to talk about it today, which might inspire others. How does dyslexia present itself at different stages of life? How might it be for someone who is in grade school, for example, say 10, 11, 12 years old, and then are there changes that occur when somebody becomes an adult and they're in their 20s and 30s or beyond?
It really depends on the help that somebody gets, what the changes are. The changes you'd see, I'd like to start a little farther back than 10, because what happens is really what you see in kindergarten and first grade, where kids enter school excited to learn to read. You've got this very intelligent child. You can tell they're smart. They love listening to things and answering questions. And they start learning to read, and they just fall apart. They can't remember the sounds that the letters make. They can't blend them together well to make a word. They struggle to remember sight words. And if they get appropriate help at that point, they can progress quite well through school. If they don't, then that child who's 10 is a couple years behind in reading. They probably don't like to read anymore, and so because it's hard and they don't do it very well. And so at that point, they start to lose vocabulary in relation to kids who are doing a normal amount of reading, because a lot of your vocabulary knowledge comes from reading. And that continues. So if you get farther up into school, the vocabulary becomes more complicated. It gets harder and harder to kind of mask the fact that you can't really read.
412-246-2002 if you'd like to join the conversation with Christine Seppi, chairperson of the Pittsburgh region of the International Dyslexia Association. Let's go to Dennis in Belle Vernon. Dennis, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for taking my call. I listen to you all the time.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
I'm the parent of a child that's dyslexic, and she's 35 now. But years ago, I, being a school teacher, recognized that she had dyslexia as early as kindergarten. And she would always ask the what-if questions when she got into a new situation, because she wanted all the parameters, and she would play. We'd play this 20-question game all the time. But the big problem was the school system fought us constantly until finally we had to put her in a private school. And I think that all school teachers, because I'm one, I taught for 40 years, I was never taught how to deal with children like this in the classroom.
Neither was I.
Well, go ahead.
Is that a fairly common instance that Dennis is relating here?
That people are not taught how to deal with it. They're not taught how to recognize it. Most often teachers are taught that they're likely to see a developmental delay that will go away. Dyslexia is not a developmental delay. It will not go away. It needs to be remediated appropriately.
Thank you for that call, Dennis. What are the new developments in technology or learning strategies for people with dyslexia, specifically in the Pittsburgh area?
Well, I can't. There are a lot more schools that are bringing in programs and training teachers in the appropriate ways to work with kids who are having learning differences with reading. But there also are wonderful programs with software. There's one that I just was reading about where instead of just being a word recognition or spell check, it actually can see that maybe you've put the wrong form of there in to a sentence. It also often for a dyslexic, if they're using spell check, how it brings up a series of words for you to check, this dyslexic person may choose the wrong word that's still not correct. But it will actually read you the options so that you hear them and know that you're getting the right word that you want.
If you have a comment or question for Christine Seppi, chair of the Pittsburgh region of the International Dyslexia Association, 412-246-2002 is the number to call. 412-246-2002. Our email address, esspgh@wesa.fm. And you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Christine, what led you to get involved with the organization?
I got involved because I have a son who's dyslexic. He was one of the kids that I said the school said, oh, well, he will grow out of it. He's obviously intelligent. He'll learn to read.
And when was this?
We started really noticing problems in about 1997 when he was in second grade and really couldn't read. And so by the fall of 97, when he was going into third grade, we had him in tutoring, which wasn't helping. We finally got him tested after the end of third grade. And the tester, when I said, okay, what needs to be done to help this child, said, well, I'm a psychologist. I can tell you what's wrong, but I can't give you the educational information. It was like, oh, great. So now I know officially that my child can't read, but I don't know what to do.
So what did it take to get it diagnosed, and what kinds of support did you eventually find for him?
The support that we found, the diagnosis was done through a psychologist, which is what has to be done to diagnose it, generally either a school psychologist or a neuropsychologist. But what we found was that what he needed was a multisensory structured phonics program, and the umbrella for those, they call it Orton-Gillingham-based, is what these programs are called. Orton was the doctor in the 1920s who first kind of defined dyslexia. And we were fortunate to find out about the Children's Dyslexia Center, which was founded by the Masons, that provided that kind of tutoring. And so he started learning to read as he went into fifth grade.
412-246-2002, the number to call. Let's go to Tom on the north side. Tom, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, Paul, and hello also to your guest. I have a question as an adult, actually as a senior at this point. I have had difficulty all my life when I'm writing, juxtaposing letters in words, in certain words. And in my reading comprehension, I actually worked in radio briefly part-time. I'm an excellent news reader. I can read rapidly, you know, like off the page verbally. But when I'm actually reading a book, I have to read some, you know, like a paragraph over and over and over sometimes to remember it, to comprehend it. What I'd like to know is, does that sound like dyslexia? And also, is there a test that I can take to find out and determine whether, in fact, I do actually have this?
There would have to be a series of tests you'd have to take. That would see how you do. They would look particularly at kinds of things like reading of nonsense words. They would look at rapid naming ability and a variety of tests that I really don't have time to go into right now. Yes, you could be tested to see if you have dyslexia, and it certainly sounds like you could. That idea that you have a hard time keeping track of the comprehension of what you read because your brain is concentrating on decoding those words is really a common characteristic of dyslexia.
Tom, hope that...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. We're running out of time, so very quickly.
No, I just wondered, where could I get tested?
If you would email pittsburgh.pbida.org or look up on pbida.org for the email address, we can get you a list of people in the area who do testing.
Thank you, Tom. Good luck to you. In the workplace, what are some of the things to consider in being cognizant of the fact that a coworker may have traits of dyslexia?
It would really depend on how remediated somebody was. Somebody who's well remediated, you would never know it. And so my son is perfectly capable at his job now, and he does big data marketing research for a consulting firm.
Does he have strategies for working with his learning difference?
The strategy that he uses is that he has to make sure that he has actually written what he thought he was going to write. And so he says if he writes an email, he puts it aside for a little while and rereads it later before he sends it. You know, even just a couple of minutes to go back and make sure that what he really wrote was what he really meant to write and that he didn't leave a word out or put in the wrong word. As far as working with somebody who was less remediated, you'd want to make sure that you gave instructions verbally if possible instead of just in writing, and check to make sure that somebody really understood the directions that were given. Those would be important. Also, sometimes people who are dyslexic have a lot of difficulty with right and left, so you might want to be saying to somebody, go towards the window rather than turn right.
Let's go to Barbara in Mount Washington. Barbara.
Morning. Hi. How are you?
Hi. We're,
or good afternoon, I should say.
Thank you for joining us. We're running over on time, so if you can make it quick.
That's okay. Real quick, I'm a survivor as a parent, a veteran of dyslexia as far as my child does, who's a middle-aged adult now. And it was really, really a difficult situation. And I did not learn until I privately took him for testing when he was 15 or 16 that he had dyslexia. Before that, the school records were, he's bright, he's just lazy, very negative. And he went from being a very positive, kid that was happy once he entered regular school after preschool, which was very positive in kindergarten, to having all sorts of self-doubts and thinking he was stupid.
What's happening with him now, Barbara?
Well, he's a middle-aged individual, but he still gets left and right mixed up. And one program I had him in, which was actually in another state, and it was a summer program for specifically kids with a variety of learning disabilities, but he took driver's ed there. And the driver's ed teacher said, oh, this is no problem at all. And he would write left on the left hand, back of the hand, and right on the back. Because
Barbara, I have to jump in, but are those typical
those are very typical. Those are typical, and the kinds of things that she's talking about having to figure out and fight for your child is really important. We'd really encourage people to look into our conference for more information.
And one final call from James in Washington. James, if you can make it quick, please. Hi, James.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Yes, go ahead with your question quickly for Christine.
Does dyslexia affect my numbers? I seem to get my numbers mixed up. I drive a tractor trailer, and we have to write down our trailer number that we pick up, and sometimes I'll write it backwards.
Good question.
Is that a possibility? And thank you for letting me on your show.
Certainly.
I love your show. I listen a lot.
Thank you. It is our pleasure.
That's actually called dyscalculia.
Dyscalculia.
Dyscalculia, I can never say it quite right, but it can often go along with dyslexia. It's often a side issue that some people have and some people do not.
We are unfortunately out of time, but there is a conference coming up, a one-day conference in Pittsburgh addressing issues associated with dyslexia, and we've been talking with Christine Seppi. She's chairperson of the Pittsburgh region of the International Dyslexia Association. Christine, thank you so much for being with us today on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up, March Madness is a popular term heard even in April, but who owns it? It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.